Okay, info. It's been even more fun to work with this than with 199. Anyway, so I'm gonna get a short update where we are and a couple of the open issues that we currently have. But before that, next slide, please. We did have one working group last call. I got a lot of comments based on that. So what that resulted in was almost complete rewrite of the document. So just to make sure that anyone who at that ever point have had any comments, requested some text to be inserted in the draft, whatever, please take another look at the document because there was a lot of rewrite, like I said, in the version 2. Some of the stuff you wanted there may have been disappeared by mistake or due to the rewrite of error. So please take a second look at it. And the idea, there was a new working group's last call trigger based on the version 2. I got some additional comments now based on that. But the idea is then that I try to take those comments. If we can solve these open issues, I put those in the version 3, and then, you know, we can hopefully get done with the document. So please read the document if you're interested.
Yeah, as Christer pointed out, we have had already two working group last calls, but basically the comments were extensive. So I mean, we want to make sure that everybody's happy with the draft. So please go and read it again and send your comments to the list.
Yeah, because there's always been an example of where something was removed, which shouldn't have been removed, at least without email discussion. So, you know, please make sure that something which you have requested to be there has not been taken away. So then a couple of open issues which we have. Next, please. The first one is related to when you register an info package. What is the information? The idea is that we're going to establish an IANA registry where you can register these info packages. And the question has been, what information are you required to provide in order to do that? The first alternative is that you have to write an RFC in order to do that. The second one is that you have some kind of publicly available document. It can be an ITF document. It can be a document in your company, wherever, as long as it's available for people who are interested. Third alternative, and I mean, this is the minimum, of course, the minimum requirements we have. And then alternative 3 is that it's a restricted document. It can be, for example, another standard organization which does this, but it may require, for example, some membership to have access to it, and so on and so on. And the fourth alternative is we don't basically require any kind of information that other than, you know, whoever wants to register the info package provides the name of the info package. Of course, it will be, you know, people will not find any information about this info package, but at least we will prevent info package name clashes in case someone else is registering the same info package. And we've had some discussion regarding this alternative 4. For example, if some company or someone wants to register his info packet but doesn't really want to provide any information to the public, maybe you should use a vendor tree or something like that. But I mean, we can discuss the details, I guess, when we see where this is going. So based on some offline discussions I have had, it seems like we're leaning towards alternative 3 or 4. So I think but of course, if you prefer some other alternative, you're free to say so. But comments, please.
Cool. So it's Eric Berger. So the you know, sort of some of the issues that were coming around was we wanted to make it really easy for someone to register something because we've historically made it so hard that nobody registers anything. You know, that said, we've had some experience with event packages where when people register not much of anything, then it turns out that, you know, you get a whole bunch of things that do the same thing that don't interoperate. So that's the balance we're trying to achieve here.
Yeah, and I one example which I gave myself from alternative 4 is, for example, you have a company or something and you have an application and you sell that to other people based on some kind of licensing mechanism. So you know, you license my application and then I will give you the info package, but that, you know, otherwise you won't get it. Those kind of things, and in those cases it would be good at least if the company or whoever could register the info package name, so we don't have this clash. But
wow, look at that, John Peterson, New Star. we come to this crossroads a lot, right, in our design here in the SIP working group and elsewhere in the ITF. I mean, I guess two high-level comments about it. One, it's probably best to cast these in 5226 terms, that is, in terms of what the specific IANA policy is. There's a set of policies that are listed in the RFC for IANA considerations that we should align this with. So, like, specification required roughly matches up to what publicly available specification and alternative to there means and so on. So, I mean, we should specify something that fits in with IANA's existing rubric. If we need to deviate from that, we're probably already making a mistake. So on the second point, since we do come to this crossroads a lot, I tend to feel that the purpose of coming to a standards body and doing standardization and having an IANA registry for these kinds of package names and so on is to foster interoperability. And so the cases that we need to look at and the decision we need to make, I think, is really based on what kind of interoperability we're really hoping to foster with this. And are we going to do something here that is going to increase interoperability by allowing this to be very, very strict, or are we going to do something that's very lenient and understand how that's going to decrease interoperability? Because I think that is really the trade-off. The less people are required to register, the less of this is public. The more people can have a proprietary option and send it around and so on, the less publicly interoperable that will actually end up being from a standardization perspective. Now, people can always choose to just do things that are not interoperable, but in that case, they don't need a standard. And they're not trying to be standard, right? And so when we're talking about what we're going to standardize, what we're actually going to have in a standard for how you understand info packages, we should emphasize the things here that actually we want to do for the sake of interoperability. So the people that don't want to be interoperable don't need a standard. And catering this to them doesn't make really that much sense to me. We come to this again and again, I think, where there is this fundamental trade-off. And, I mean, other than, yeah, namespace package collision, I mean, that's a pretty easy property to be able to guarantee. But, I think that the things that we do standardize, we should standardize for the sake of making the protocol more interoperable, and that should be the point behind it.
No, I agree with you, but the thing is that if someone wants or makes some package and he or she doesn't really want it to be publicly interoperable, he or she can do this package anyway, no matter what we say here. So again, the advantage with Alternative 4 is that at least we would be aware of this package, whatever it is, and no one else would register a package with the same name. Of course, they can choose not even to register the package, in which case there's nothing we can do. But
Colin Jennings, I have a separate question to ask, but I was totally lost by that. It sounds like John said one thing, and then you agreed with him and said exactly the opposite, that it would be great that somebody who wanted to standardize something didn't have to pass on what the standard was or have any interoperability. I'm lost. How does that help for?
I mean, interoperable. I mean, there are two things here: interoperable or publicly interoperable. For example, if someone wants to.
What's non-publicly interoperable? Perhaps you could talk about that.
Well, I think I gave an example. For example, if anyone who's going to implement a specific application which uses a specific info package, for example, will have to buy some application license from me or whatever. Because someone who does not have that license or does not know how to implement this application doesn't really need to know to support this package, because you're not going to be able to use it anyway. So the thing which is interoperable here is that you can still use the receive info headers which we have here to negotiate or not, or indicate what you support, and you know that you're not going to use a package name which has already been registered, but you cannot really use this info package because you haven't been provided, due to a license or whatever, the information you need in order to implement a specific application which uses this.
So if I got that right, because I haven't bought the license to somebody else's spec, then it's good that it doesn't interoperate. I'm still lost on what you're saying.
I didn't say it's good. I said if you don't have the information to build this application, you won't be able to use this info package.
So sure. So that was what John said. Is from the ITF point of view, that it shouldn't. We're the reason the people brought this to the standards community was so that it could interoperate between different people. Shouldn't we pick something?
Let's frame the discussion, because you are talking about interoperations, and Christer is talking about namespace collisions, and those are the two properties that we are mixing here. So basically, we all agree that we have to avoid namespace collisions. But then the discussion is that whether we want public interoperability, which is what John and Colin were, you know, basically advocating.
Okay. Yeah, so actually I was going to come and ask a slightly separate question, which was I was trying to think about what are the real use cases that drive this, and then maybe that helped me decide whether I thought interoperability was needed. So what are the packages we imagine that will take advantage of this mechanisms? Just to think about some of the example ones coming.
Well, I know, for example, in 3GPP there is a need for at least one package. That, however, is a DTMF package, so I don't think that's really 3GPP specific. I think that's something which should, you know, probably be done maybe here in ITF. On the other hand, I know there, for example, in the Open IPTV forum and in Thaispan IPTV work, they are looking at some package which I believe is maybe not that useful for other architectures. However, I don't think that would be an alternative for case. I think that would be either 2 or 3. I don't know if these Open IPTV forum specifications are available, but that at least it would be specified in one or the specifications. So that would be 2 or 3. So
what is the use case that they want to do with it? I'm more interested in that. I mean, DTMF, I understand, and DTMF
I don't
is
have
one
the
I would like to
I don't
ITF,
have the
right.
I don't have the details because I'm not involved in that. I just been asked about the info package mechanism in general. It has to do something with the IPTV control between the user and the server, but I don't know the details, so I can't answer to that.
Okay, so give an example point of just one of DTMF. I think my opinion is I would like to see interoperability of DTMF, not just non-code point collision.
Yeah, I do agree. I mean, that's a good example where we should have something, because we shouldn't have 10 different ways of doing DTMF. I mean, we should have one way of doing DTMF. I mean, using info, then if you want to use something.
Adam Roach, I wanna comment briefly on something Gonzalo said, which is that we're separating out the idea of interoperability from namespace collisions, and I don't think we can really do that, because the idea of having a registered namespace is to foster interoperability, right? If we didn't care about whether things were interoperating, then we wouldn't do any of this work, right? We'd stick with the old info framework, and it would all be done by bilateral agreement, effectively. Now, when you get into extensions that are basically part of a hidden document, something secret that you need to agree to, that's only going to work in small, closed garden environments that are basically going to have bilateral agreements in place. And that's not really the interoperability that we're talking about here. It's if you end up with namespace collisions with those things, that's fine, because they're small, tightly controlled, closed gardens. So having those in the registry gains nothing. It gains them nothing. It gains us nothing. I don't think there's any value to registering these things that are not available. You're not fostering interoperability. You're not helping them. You're not helping us. On the other hand, if we have something in there that says, if you want to have a registered event package, we need to at least know what it does and how, then that is encouraging the publication of this information. Now, I don't think we need to have a bar as high as saying we need an RFC out there. I'm more than happy to say, as long as this is something that's out there and available, if it comes to another SDO, that's great. If it's example.com/infospec.pdf that you can just grab and download, that's great too. But once we get to the point that it's not available and it can't be implemented, then having it registered in IANA doesn't gain anyone anything.
But you would be okay then with alternative 3, which means that it could be not really to anyone, but for example, a member of this specific SDO, or do you say it has to be alternative 2, so basically anyone should be able to get this? I mean, I think what the draft currently says that there is a strong recommendation that you should really, you know, provide this information. So this is not really what that we want to would like to encourage people to do one way or another. But I mean, we need to have a rule, so to say.
Adam Roach again. Okay, I'm going to go back to what John said, which is once we start getting outside of what we have specified as what IAN is used to, then I think we strayed off of a useful path. So I think the answer is specification required. I'm not going to say which of these things up there. It's halfway between 2 and 3 in the grand scheme of things. But the specification required that is in the existing document that talks about BCPs for putting stuff in IAN, I think is a level that we want to aim for.
One clarification. The authors were discussing, actually, because they had a lot of private discussions on whether to follow one of these IANA things. And as Adam said, somehow they thought that they were going to take one of these and modify it. So comments along the lines that, you know, just John was pointing it out and Adam would be useful, just, you know, if that would be desirable. Eric.
Eric Berger, who's not getting read. So I have a newfound appreciation for the ITUT, and I now understand how they got to where they got, because what we're saying is if you're going to use any internet mechanism, it must be registered, approved, vetted, and blessed by the IETF, which is why we create extensible protocols so that people have to come to us before they do anything. There is value in having the dual use interoperable amongst many members the whole world can use, and preventing a namespace collision, because my private double super secret 3GPP IPTV mumble frats is called DTMF. That, you know, there is value for these private things to be at least kept out or, you know, registered in the namespace. And as Henning will tell you, if we do VND dot or X dot, that also doesn't help, because sometimes these double super secret things end up being kind of useful and then people do publish it and life is good. The other thing is, even with, and it's why we were dancing around specification required, if it takes 3 years to register something that's running on top of something that we hope was pretty much a generic interoperability platform, then that's also a non-starter. And in fact, if I wanted to do it quickly, I would take it to the ITUT, because that could be done in 6 months to 2 years. It'd be fast.
But alternative do you
Eric, if I understood the discussions among the authors, the problem with specification required you guys had was that nowadays it's defined as you need the specification plus an expert review, right? So that, if you could share that with the group, that'd be great.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so because today's specification required does require expert review. The flip side is I was offering we do specification required, and the specification can point to something that says this page left blank. And that way you get the best of both worlds or the worst of both. And yes, it could be the worst of both worlds, but it's infinitely better than what we have today.
Hanu.
Hannu Hietalahti. I'm not at all sure whether we got through the detailed technical discussion on this particular info package here, but in a general level, I would say that usually it's a good sign of a living protocol when it gets adopted outside of the group that designed it. As an example, 3GPP reusing IETF protocols. In many cases, it means that some new attributes of that protocol, even though the same base protocol is used, often new attributes, either MIME types or diameter command codes or maybe info packages, need to be enhanced at some point. And I have been part of the registration process of some of such identifiers, and what bothers me in that process is that in my understanding, registration should be, just as the name implies, registration of something that was done and agreed to be used by some people, rather than back and forth battle on whether it can be done or not. So I do appreciate that, of course, the owners of the protocol in IETF need to be responsible for reviewing the use of the protocol and make sure that everything is done properly. It would be really good if we can outline some rules regarding the questions Christer is asking here. I don't know which way the answers are going to be, but at least I would like to know what they are.
I mean, we do have some rules. I mean, when you do write your IP specification, the draft says that this is the kind of information it should contain, right? So those kind of rules we have. Of course, who's going to make sure that they are followed? I mean, I guess we have to trust people. But I mean, unless we do have some kind of formal expert review, which someone would really actually start looking at, okay, have you provided all the information that you need to provide? I think the information that you need to provide is difficult to do something without providing it. So I don't think that's a big problem, really, that people are going to let the information out. It's, you know, the name of the info package, the mind bodies and things like that. So I think it needs to be there. But
John Peterson, trying to get my RFI. Oh, there we go. So the text actually in 5226 about specification required says that when it's used, specification required also implies the use of a designated expert who will review the public specification and evaluate whether it is sufficiently clear to allow interoperable implementations. So there is the designated expert procedure built into it, but it's not a designated expert procedure that evaluates it for technical quality or determines whether or not this is an appropriate extension or something like that. It evaluates to determine whether or not this is, you know, a three-line thing that says we define this specification, we define this new option, and it's really great, and we enjoy it very much. Thank you very much. Which is obviously, you know, merely saying specification required means you could just put something like that in. An expert actually looks at it and determines, is this a specification, right? That's the only check that the expert does in this instance. So I don't think it's a bar where they're making a technical decision about the validity of the approach. Since I wasn't clear about this when I came up last time, yes, I probably think that specification required is the right level of specificity for this. I understand what you're saying about, you know, the need for people to be able to do their own thing in their own space and not have us infringe on it. And honestly, that has been the trend. I mean, we've been trying more and more through the work we've done in 3427bis and elsewhere to liberate ourselves from our obsessive need to control what other people are doing with SEP. I don't think that this is really a deep control that we would be levying to require that there be a specification that meets the bar described in 5226 associated with an info event package.
But now when you say specification required and you talk about the expert review, do you mean that then it's got to be an ITF specification? Or could we provide to the expert reviewers, you know, take a look at these 3GPP documents?
Of course. In fact, you know, the stipulations in 5226 about this are very specific. It is not requiring an RFC. And again, that the reviewer is merely doing this check, because I'll read the text again. He reviews the public specification to evaluate whether it is sufficiently clear to allow interoperable implementations. And the purpose of this check is to prevent someone from saying, I have a specification for this, and then when you go look at the page where the specification is, it is not, in fact, a specification that someone could use to implement something. That is the sole purpose of this check. So it is different from other designated expert things we've talked about in the past where someone is determining, reading a MIME type review, say, like the URN NID list or something like that.
Colin?
So I was just thinking about your option three, and I was wondering how you were going to find what another SDO is, or what that was going to be, how you do that.
Sorry, could you repeat that? I didn't hear the question.
Oh, sorry. In alternative three there, where you're talking about it needs a specification from another SDO, how would you decide what another SDO is?
Yeah, I mean, okay. I think this is, for example,
that would eliminate the ITF, I guess. So.
I mean, if some SDO, it's like, for example, SDO is just an example here. What I mean really is here that it is restricted in the sense that it's not like any one of us can just go and download it. This could be from some organization, SDO or something else, which require, you know, for example, some kind of membership in order to get that specification. That's really what I mean.
So you're seriously proposing here, it's like specification required, but it has to be one that can't be free, you have to pay for? And is that your serious suggestion?
It's not a suggestion. It's one of the alternatives. And it doesn't... It's...
Okay. Yeah.
I'm not suggesting that. In a lot of cases, of course, it may cost some money to be a member of those organizations, but I think that's a little outside the scope, whether it costs money or not. I mean, the question really is that should we allow something which people cannot go and download just like that.
So specification required does not mean free at all. Many of the we're perfectly willing to accept specifications that you have to sign an NDA to even get plus pay money. I mean, that's fits under the current specification required terminology.
Yeah, and that's a little what I had in mind with alternative four, right? So I talked about licensing, but it could be NDA also. But in any case, it's not really something which anyone can just go and download. But
so maybe it sounds the more you talk about these, that your alternative 2, 3, and 4 all sound like what IETF would call specification required.
It could be, yeah. But I mean. So I think both 2, 3, and 4, yes, you have some kind of specification, right? I mean, you need to write it down somewhere, whether it's an IETF draft, so if my own company writes something in our private documents, you do have some kind of specification. So I guess the question is, if we agree on, yes, specification required, then the question is, okay, but then what's the availability of that specification? I don't think we disagree that someone doesn't need to write something anywhere. You need to write down this info package information somewhere.
Yeah, just a comment. I mean, the whole point of the IANA writing the drafts about the policies is that, you know, each working group doesn't need to define a new policy and their new, you know, terms and terminology and stuff like that. So I recommend actually the authors to start using the IANA terms and the IANA policies so that we are all on the same page and we know what we are talking about. Adam.
Adam Roach, I've come up here to agree with one of Eric's assertions and then disagree with his conclusion. I do agree that we don't want to have people required to take 2, 3, 4 years to have something registered in IANA. But I don't think that points us away from specification required. I mean, if someone can sit down in an afternoon, come up with something sufficiently descriptive that allows people to interoperate and then put it out on a website where it will remain permanently available per the definition of that in the IANA policies, then there's nothing that would stop them from having that registered that day. And this literally could be a matter of a couple of hours, not years. And I don't think specification required gets in the way of that. We're not talking about having people make RFCs or even go through an SDO. We're talking about having a document that specifies this to the point that it can be interoperable. That's all it requires. And I don't think that's a very high bar.
I do exist. Eric Berger. I love you, Adam, because you know, this is.
I love you too, Eric.
Thank you. This is one of the first times that you know I've stood in a SIP-oriented, large format thing where I actually feel consensus building in a room, because especially when John went over reiterating again what specification does and does specification requirement required does and does not mean. I hope the Jabber person's not describing me literally. That is what we really want. And in fact, I would say that any whack job who comes up with an interesting info thing and publishes the spec and all that and lets people use it, and that could be some guy in India, could be some gal in Columbia University, it could be some people at this place called Nokia, great. It gets published. The expert reviewer makes sure that it is something that's published, and that something, again, could quite possibly be, you know, come see us for the licensing terms to sign the NDA, but that it's there, it's available, people know where to turn. That is what we're looking for, you know, that it's not a full-fledged 3-year RFC process. That, I think, satisfies pretty much everybody.
Okay, I mean, I heard two concerns. One was from Hanu about 3GPP, and basically 3GPP is a specification, so you know, this would address that. Then Eric would be happy with that. Is there anyone that wouldn't be happy with the specification required as defined by the IANA? Because maybe we can close down this discussion, actually.
Xavier Marjou, I just wanted to point out that there is an IANA page that could serve as a comparison. For example, for the SIP events parameter, there is a Siemens RTP statistics package, and nobody complains about it. So my opinion would be to allow all of these possibilities.
Actually, if I can hop in there, just as author of 3265, there's a history there. When 3265 was published, we actually had a first-come, first-served policy associated with event packages. The Siemens RTP stats package made it in there, And after some evaluation, we decided, well, that wasn't necessarily a really good idea because, look, one of the early registrations came in, and there's no hope of interoperating with that. And that's when the SIP change process changed the policy. They decided, well, that's not a recipe for interoperability. In fact, that's a recipe for disaster. So we're going to have to require that there is an RFC published before you register one of these names. And I think for SIP events, that's the right level because it really is a very fundamental part of the way that we're doing things in SIP. I don't think we need that high a bar for info, but I do think that info needs to learn from that lesson and say, yeah, if we put first come, first serve out there, what we're going to have is a soup of unusable code points that don't foster interoperability in any way whatsoever.
We can take Hisham and Robert, and then I'm going to be taking a ham for specification required. Well, Robert is laughing. Maybe he has a comment about that. Hisham.
Hisham Kadigal. It seems to me that there are two issues. On one side, one is saying that RFCs take too long to standardize. It's going to take 2-3 years. And the other side is saying, what about interoperability? My suggestion would be alternative one, which is... an RFC, but it's an AD-sponsored draft towards the RFC where it speeds things up, where the AD sponsoring would require interoperability reviews instead of reviews of standards and whatever it takes 2-3 years to do.
Okay. Robert?
All right, Robert Sparks. I have a thought experiment that I want to use to challenge what we might choose to say here. Let's say we put this in place, whatever policy we have here is established. I walk up to IANA to register a package, let me call it an info foo package, and the semantics of this package is, once you receive one of these things, ignore any buys that you ever see. Wait until you get some other future info that's in this package, and that'll be the real buy. Okay? Now, the info, the things that are required for creating a package says that you can't go mess with actual SIP dialog semantics, right? But I got this registration procedure. Where's the check? Where's the check that says, wow, you're not doing what the info package says that you get to do? And if we go with, you know, basically specification required, I think what we're saying is we're not going to check. And if somebody wants to go do this thing that fundamentally alters the protocol with this thing, well, okay, they can go off and do this. Am I wrong?
John wants to talk about that.
John Peterson? Yeah, I don't think you're wrong, actually. And I mean, if we wanted to contrast this momentarily, and I think it's worth doing that with what we're doing in 3427bis, you know, we do still require for headers that are going to fundamentally change the behavior of SIP. We have a lot of language about this, although, to be honest, it's not awesome language in the sense it's full of weaseldom, right, about what it really means to be fundamentally overriding the way that SIP works or something. We have a lot of language about those headers. As long as you're not really messing with things, yeah, then feel free. Go out and do whatever you want with this, and it's totally cool. But if you're going to do something that really seems to change the way SIP works, that still requires standards track. And, I mean, if we wanted to answer, I think, the concern that Robert's raising, it would probably really end up looking like that. We would have two tracks, basically, that would be associated with these packages. One where we would keep it very Wild West open and say, yeah, provided you're not, you know, doing anything that's too fundamental, feel free to do whatever you like. We don't even want to know what it is. But if you're going to do something more radical, then obviously that would require an RFC and require SIP approval. Though, of course, then you need the expert to tell you which one this actually is. And that would be, in other words, you know, if somebody's registering a package, you would need to have an expert who can tell you this is one from column A and not one from column B. So if we wanted to go down that path, I think that would probably be the likely consequence. On the other hand, I mean, you know, I hear Hanu's point about this, about, you know, I think we really do, and I think this is Krister's point as well, you know, I think we really do need to relinquish some of the, you know, control freak tendencies we've exhibited over the last decade. I don't think they've served us well. I don't think they've served the community particularly well. So, you know, I think I stick by specification required for this, despite the risks. If people are going to do stupid things with it in event packages, then I'm willing to believe that they just, you know, won't ultimately be successful, and we can let the market work that out.
Adam has a comment.
Actually, that way I can respond. That's so cool.
Oh.
Adam Roach. So I wanted to answer what Robert was saying about specification required basically being a backdoor to do crazy things. Currently, adding an attribute to SDP is specification required. And it would be just as trivial to say, I'm adding an attribute to SDP in this invite that basically means when you see this, ignore buys and wait until you see something else. So that loophole, if someone's coming in with that much crazy on their shoulders, they're going to get it through somehow. There are other ways to get that into the specification if they've decided they want to do that. And I don't think this is going to be opening a hole that doesn't already exist.
Eric?
Okay, so this reader just doesn't work. So it's Eric Berger, not Adam Roach. Oh, well, it wipes. Well, there we go. In fact, more to the point, you know, what are our alternatives? We have specification required and somebody specifies something really stupid and it's in the sunlight. And it, being in the sunlight, somebody might actually even say, hey, wait a minute, you know, toxic waste warning. Or, you know, post on the list or, you know, go to the SIP forum and say, how can you say, you know, this would be really stupid. But it's in the sunlight. We know it's going on and we know it's there. And then prevent people in the real world from doing it. Or, you know, go the moral equivalent of the RFC path where, like we had in the, you know, the days between 2543 and 3261 where, oh, we're, you know, 2543 BIS 11 compliant where you're BIS 13 compliant and they're both specified, but they're not really ratified and who knows what you're doing. So, in fact, since it's so wacky, we're not even going to bother documenting it and then all of a sudden things break. So I think even if someone specifies something really stupid, we'll all know about it and in a sense know not to do it as opposed to it being a secret and you know, really fostering non-interoperability.
Okay. We can craft some text in the IANA specifications section saying that, you know, I mean, it doesn't alter the fundamental working of SIP. And I'm sure we can craft that offline. But now I want to take a ham on specifications.
Can I just, to those who haven't read the spec, of course, it's valid what Robert and Eric says. I mean, the info events, the base spec says, you know, it talks about, you know, this must not affect the state of the SIP session. It's if it fails, it's only a transaction failure and so on and so on. Of course, if someone goes and changes that, you know, that's bad. But then they break the whole thing. And I mean, that's
we can just hope
that's not going to happen.
We can agree on some text about that because we all agree that that's not what we want. But anyway, let me take a ham on specification required. So I'm going to be asking who would be happy with basically having specification required as the IANA policy for events, and then who would like a different alternative. Okay? So who would be happy with choosing specification required as the IANA policy for registering event packages? Please ham now. Thank you. Who would like to have a different alternative? Please ham now. Okay, so for the note takers, we have consensus that we will be using specification required. Thank you, Christer.
Thank you. And then there is another issue. This was actually raised by Paul. I don't know if he's online following this. I hope he is. But in any case, I'll present it. Currently, we don't have any offer answer kind of rules for info packages. The only thing we have in the spec today, and that's also something which has been changed a little regarding refer and subscribes and so, but you know that's a separate issue. But the only thing we have in the spec today is which SIP messages are you allowed to insert, indicate which packages you're willing to receive. But again, there are no rules. You know, if I send something to you in the invite, then you have to send me something back in the response, similar to offer answer. However, there was an issue raised by Paul saying that if we don't mandate it at least for re-invites, empty re-invites without SDP, for example, we can end up in trouble with three-party call control kind of scenarios. So I think what he said that, we should require it in re-invite response to make sure that 3PCC works. And then I asked him, you know, okay, so, but if we then require it in the re-invite response, then we also need to require it in ACK. Unfortunately, he hasn't replied to that since, so I don't really know where he stands on that. But I mean, the issue really is that do we want to mandate or define some kind? I use sort of offer answer, but I mean, do we need to have some kind of offer answer kind of rules, general rules, or in this specific case, or we have as we have today that there are no such rules? Thank you.
Eric Berger. So, you know, sort of the whole point of third-party call control is you don't know that you're doing third-party call control. You're just doing a SIP session. If we go back to the original language of the info packages draft, you know, say what you mean. You had to say it all the time. The whine, so you know where I stand, the whine that came back is, oh, I'm going to spend another 30 or 40 or 50 bytes saying receive info every time. Well, tough. Say what you mean, and then you don't have any problems ever.
Adam Roach, I agree with Eric. I also came up here to make sure that we didn't conflate this with the idea of having an offer answer exchange here. This is an announcement. We're not doing a negotiation. We're saying this is what I can send, this is what I can receive. You're not going to tell me what I can receive. I know what I can receive. I know what I can process. We're not going to a negotiation for that. But I agree with Eric that just including what your current state of what I can send and what I can receive is not overly onerous in terms of implementation, and the number of bytes this is in the wire is trivial compared to the size of SIP messages.
So you think that we it should be included? But then we have the next question, which we have also talked about when we talked about offer answer. When I do, because I think the current status is if I receive an empty reinvite without an STP offer, what I'm supposed to send then in the STP offer that I sent in the response, it's not what I currently have for the session, is what I would offer for a new session. I think that is what we have. So then the question is, are we going to have the same thing here? Is it these are the packages which I'm allowing to receive for this particular session? I mean, it's something we have established earlier. Or is it this? These are all the packages which I would maybe be willing to receive for a new session.
State what you're going to do and do it. So you always say everything or everything that's appropriate for what's going on. And again, if it's something that needs to know, it's in a 3PCC situation, you're hosed anyway because we don't have any way of signaling that in SIP. That would be a different work task. And in the real world, how likely is this to happen?
Sorry?
In the real world, how likely is this to happen?
So what you are asking is that if mid-dialogue somebody would change the packages he's able to receive, right?
No, I mean, that's not. If you have a session and I'm talking with you and I want to change the packages, I can do that. I can send a new list of packages to you. That's not a problem. The problem is if there is a third-party call control and I send you an empty reinvite to the new user, which has been added to the call, then the question is, would you be mandated to send your list in this 200, okay, even if it hasn't changed?
But this is what they are saying, to be explicit and send it all the time. So this is like...
But I mean, what do you mean all the time? I mean...
All the time means all the time.
In every... no, but... So you're saying, because now, for example, assuming we allow this package in message X, Y, and Z, and response to those. So you're saying we should always include them even if it doesn't change. In all those requests, in all the responses associated with them, we should always include everything. Is that what you're saying?
You are talking about target refresh for this kind of thing.
When
I read the draft, I that was my impression. So any target refresh, if this is what can change stuff, it needs to contain it.
Well, I'm not sure, because you can send an update, for example, without a contact header if you don't change
but
the contact header.
But update is a target refresh request.
Yes, it is. So, and target, you can use target refresh requests to send new info packages also. But if I'm sending you an update, I don't change the contact, I don't need to include that. But if I send an update, and even if I don't change the info packages, now according to this, I still need to include.
You include contact anyway. But I mean, what's the point? Because people claim that the benefit would be to save a few bytes. So this is what you are arguing for, that you want to save a few bytes, or what is the problem?
I'm not arguing. I'm okay to go with this. I'm just trying to clarify this. Does this mean now that we, in every message where you are allowed to include the info packages, you must do it, even if they haven't changed? That's the only...
And that was the basically feedback you got from Eric and Adam. Yeah. Henry.
I see great value to this work if it were done the right way. So let me make two suggestions, which are strictly personal, what the right way would be. Obviously, the peer review is priceless, but it becomes worthwhile only if it's documented by some testing in some usage case. For example, in milliseconds, what you've said about the timers. Otherwise, it's just a discussion without any test support. As an old-fashioned engineer, that's how I see it. The second is, what do we do with it? And I would see in an object chain, the top object would be SIP core dot info. After that, you have timer 1, timer 2, timer 3. Then you have some instances. The instances are different usages. One usage is a 3GPP, which is legitimate, but it shouldn't be the only one and restricting. That's why 3GPP can be an instant. Even in 3GPP, you may have different company implementations, which again is legitimate. It could be the Ericsson instance, but it has to be an instance because somebody else may want to choose different timers for different reasons, for a different usage scenario. So to make a sum of it, one is the peer review is priceless, but it gets value only if it's confirmed by some type of measurement. And the second is, if I had control over this working group, I would make it as a chain of objects, children, and instances, which is good programming practice anyway.
Was that a comment to this issue, or was it more...
This is an instance of what I would like SIP Core to do. So I apologize for taking you as this instance, but it was very handy.
Okay. But we take your comment as general comment. I mean, you've repeated it many times that we should be moving to running code again, that probably we got far from it. Also, I mean, just to make it clear, when we were talking about specification required before, that doesn't require an RFC, doesn't preclude an RFC either. So you can absolutely define these things in an RFC. So that's absolutely clear. Dale.
Dale Worley. Speaking to this issue here, the question is when you do a re-invite, and the initial invite, the invite that's sent does not specify receive info, then what should the respondent who sends the response do? And the question, should we use the same philosophy as offer answer, where an empty invite must get a response that contains not the SDP that's now being used, but an offer that contains all the codecs that you're willing to use? And when you read this in 3261, it seems to be a very elaborate mechanism that's not at all clear what you use it for. But we wound up discovering when we were doing music on hold that, in fact, it's very useful for what is essentially a third-party call control mechanism. And I can see that exactly the same sorts of things might well show up in terms of receive info as well if somebody standing in the middle wants to jumper together two dialogues that he's established. You really do need a mechanism where I can send to someone a request that forces him to tell me what he's willing to do, to give me an offer, not an answer, as it were. And so I would say that even though it might not be immediately clear why we would want to choose alternative one, I have a strong sense that it will show up within a few years definitely why we want to do that.
No, I mean, I'm not objecting to the use case, and I don't have any personal, you know, preference for either of these. But I think based on the previous comments that we're not really
wanting to mandate it only for reinvite and responses and ACK. We basically want to mandate this header to be included in any message where it is allowed to be included, which means that if I send the initial invite and I send my packages to you, then you would have to send your packages, for example, in every provisional response to me and in the final response, because they are allowed to be there. Every time we send an update or a reinvite, we must include this header, even if it hasn't changed. I mean, if that's what we want to do, that's fine. I just want to make sure that that's what people are suggesting.
Well, the latter is sort of beyond my personal knowledge. What I want to say was, in specifically what you've written up there as alternative one, you do want to require that a reinvite sequence does require both ends to provide receive info and the full receive info that they would like. Now, other instances, I don't know whether that would work or not, or whether that is important or not. But in this case, I'm sure it will turn out to be so very soon.
Adam Roach, I just wanted to clarify something to make sure that there wasn't any confusion about this. Once again, what's currently defined is not an offer answer response. If I send a receive info, the responder does not winnow down the send info based on what I can receive. It's going to be everything they could possibly send, regardless of what I'm saying I can receive. So this is not going to start a new negotiation every time we send these things. It's always just going to say, here's what I can receive. And you're going to say, here's what I can send. And they may not overlap at all, and that's fine.
Of course, they can do based on what you receive, but they are not required to do that.
Right. I think.
Because, I mean, for some info package, it doesn't make sense to use them unless both ends indicate that they're willing to receive them. So, I mean, but that's application specific. I mean, it's not something really we won't need to say here. DTMF is one thing. It maybe goes only in one direction, so it doesn't matter if both need. But if you have some kind of application which uses info package and it needs to go in both directions, it doesn't really make sense if one of the users. But I think that's not really what we're discussing here. I mean,
but Adam's point was precisely that you don't list what you use. You are just listing what you support, and then they decide, what they're going
to
use.
Well, I mean, you what you list is, this is what I'm willing to receive for this dialogue. That's what the specifications say. How you determine that, I think, is implementation specific. We don't say how you determine what you're willing to receive for this dialogue. It's the same with codecs. What you send in your SDP answer doesn't need to be based on what you got in the offer. That's normally how it is, but you're not really required to do that. It's stupid, of course, if you don't do that, because if you don't have a common codec, you can't talk. But I don't think it's your mandate to do that. Thank you.
Adam Roach, sorry, actually, you are. That's what offer answer says, right? If we can't find a codec in common, you're going to send a 488, and the call's not going to go through.
Sure, but right? You can also add additional codecs, even if I don't, even if I haven't indicated that I support.
No, that's not what 3264 says. It's what I get back and it answers a subset of what we sent, and it is a negotiation. It's a very, very different thing from what info does. And that's why I keep coming up to the microphone. The only point that I've been trying to make here is this is a very, very different thing from offer answer, and we should not make it like offer answer. And the fact that it's not like offer answer makes this a far more tenable problem. This is much, much easier to solve because it's an announcement, not a negotiation.
I totally agree. And also the latest version of the draft does say that it's not offer answer, right? It's supposed to say that. But I mean, again, what I send to you, I mean, I can base it based on my own local policies. I mean, we don't really say what you have to send or how you choose. If I want to choose it based on what you send, then that's up to me, right? But
do you have something in mind? Because Adam is claiming that you wouldn't do that ever, and you are claiming that you would. So do you have a use case in mind so that we are understanding each other here?
I mean, let's say that you support application X, whatever that is, and I support application X. You send me an invite, and you don't indicate application X. Well, I can still indicate the application next to you because maybe you support it and you want to use it.
And this is what Adam is claiming.
And you want to use it later. Or I can simply choose not to indicate the application next because you didn't do that. But I mean, we don't specify how that is. And I don't think we should specify it because it's not done for answers. It's just this is what I can do. And I think people should be allowed to do that based on whatever policy they have.
But what we are talking here is to simplify the mechanism, as Adam is saying.
Yeah.
So if we have a simple mechanism that meets the simple requirement we have, that's fine. If you have a use case in which that would be useful, then we have to know because we need a slightly more complex mechanism. But we're not going to complicate the mechanism just because it would be...
I don't think we're complicating a mechanism. I think it's very easy because we say that you just send what you are willing to receive. That's all we say. We don't say it must be based on this, it must be based on that. So I think it's as simple as it can get already.
Well, it's not simple because we are having this discussion. Then you have subsets that you send differently to different people. So it's not as simple as if you send all the time everything.
Well,
but let's take all the comments. Eric.
Okay, so I'll hijack things for home. Who thinks that every time Krister says the words offer an answer, I get 100 yen? I'll take that laughter counts. Okay, so you're not allowed to say offer an answer, and if you can answer, and you can say things without saying offer answer, and I think that would just clear everything up. It's an advertisement thing. In fact, what you're talking about is a higher order totally outside of our world thing about how an application may or may not decide to advertise stuff. We just talk about you advertise everything. If you choose to do less, you're choosing to do less, and you're doing it presumably because you think you know what you're doing, but don't come to us when it, you know, don't cry to us when it doesn't work. Say what you mean, say what you want, and it always works.
I agree.
I don't know who was first, Ben or John.
John.
Sorry?
Do you agree to the 100 yen?
John.
It was Ben before, but whatever.
Ben said that it was John before.
I think I was first. But that doesn't work. John Elwell. I agree. Don't bring offer answer into it. I think it's much more like supported or allow or something like that. And if we don't I don't know whether we do or we don't mandate those in re-invite responses and acts, but I don't think we do. So it may be they're desirable for third-party call control situations, but we should do as we do for things like supported and allow. They're just advertisements.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I apologize for even mentioning offer answer, but I never suggested. I mean, I think I started the presentation by saying that we do not have any offer answer rules, and that is the reason why we have this issue. My intention was not to say let's specify offer answer rules and then we get rid of this issue. That was not my intention, but. The intention was that now, since we do not have this kind of rules, we have this issue. And how do we solve this issue? And now, based on what I heard, I think what people are saying that in every message where you are allowed to send the receive info, you must send it, no matter whether it has changed or not. Is that so? That includes all invites, all provisional and final responses to the invite, all updates, all responses, it could ACK, PRAC, and response. Is that what we want to do?
This is what people are
Because
proposing.
I don't think, we don't do that, for example, for supported and require whatever examples were given here. We only change those when the value changes.
But we are having this conversation 3 times already. This is what they have proposed, and you keep asking if this is what they mean. And they have already confirmed twice this is what they mean. So if you don't agree...
I'm not sure.
Otherwise,
yeah.
We have a decision.
I agree. But then they say they compare it to another mechanism. But then that's not the same for the other mechanism. So I just try to make sure that I and everybody understand.
Okay. So Adam, can you be very explicit on your suggestion?
Adam Roach, I want alternative one, but that's not why I came up here. I wanted to go ahead and address what Krista was saying about we keep comparing it to other mechanisms. And there are all different mechanisms. They do different things. You brought up supported and require. Those can't change. Over the course of a dialogue, those are going to remain invariant. You cannot change those during the course of a dialogue the way that they're currently specified. Now, the reason that this problem arises is because in info we say you can change these dynamically. And personally, I have a hard time coming up with use cases for that, but I'm not going to argue about that. However, because we say that, we have to make sure that the state is
crystal clear to both participants in this dialogue at any given moment. And the only way that we can guarantee it when we're doing these sorts of things is to always include it.
But, yeah.
So making it an analogy to the way we do SDP is a fallacy. Making an analogy to the way we do supported and require is a fallacy. Those are different mechanisms. They do different things. They have different properties.
But just even if we would require that you can't change this during the dialogue, you still have this problem because you're adding a new user here. But you know that's a separate issue. If you don't ask us to keep it, not to change it during the dialogue, I don't think we need to discuss that. But.
Adam Roach, no. If you weren't able to change this during the dialogue, then none of this would happen, right? You'd have to put it in the initial invite, the initial 200, the initial ACK, and that would be it, because it would be locked down for the session. The only reason you ever have to worry about keeping this in there is because the document right now says it can change. If we pulled that out, this problem goes away. You need to include it in nothing other than the initial invite, the initial 200, and the initial ACK.
Yes, for a peer-to-peer session, but we're talking about the third-party call control here.
Even for third-party call control, you'd only need to include it in those three cases because it's invariant. It cannot change.
Robert, you want to say something? No.
Let this topic finish, and then I will say something.
Okay. Eric.
Love the color. Eric Berger. We're all saying the same thing because we're all saying what we mean. And the issue is not third-party call control. The issue is call transfer and things like that. And so, yes, we say it every time. We've all been saying that we're going to say it every time. In fact, I'd almost offer to say that... I don't just want to ask, does anyone want it to be invariant, and does anyone have a problem with us mandating it all the time?
Yeah, and I'm going to take a ham about that. But first, Robert, okay. So basically, the two options are any message that can change this, like, re-invites, updates, and all their reliable responses, it will include this. And then I will be asking if people disagree with that, so not to go into more detail. So those of you who agree that we should put this information in every single message that may be able to change this, please ham. Okay, people that wouldn't like to do that, please ham now. Okay, for the note taker, we have consensus to include the information in every message. You want to say something now, Robert?
So we just spent a very long time effectively arguing about how many angels could dance in the headers of an IANA registry request. Conversations like this would have been much smoother if one of the tools that we had to guide the conversations were actual packages that we could look at what the packages needed and whether or not they needed to do these things, whether or not there was going to be any use. We've got consensus, that's fine, we can document this consensus, but I am increasingly, have been for a very long time, and am increasingly concerned that we are, off building this nice little Lego toy thing that is not going to get used. Krister made some indications that maybe there's something off in 3GPP. Is there? If it's about DTMF, is that really the right place for it to be?
What do you mean right place to be? I mean, what I said, that 3GPP has a requirement to use this for DTMF. What I said was that I don't think it's 3GPP specific, so it could be specified here. 3GPP hasn't really specified a package yet. There is just a note saying that this package, as soon as this package is available, we will put a reference to it. It could be. I think actually Hadriel, a while ago, he has provided a draft which proposes an info package for DTMF. I think it has expired and it was really never discussed on the listing.
I think it actually had a package for DTMF in it. He proposed that he might put something together, but I don't remember actually seeing that.
Okay, I'm not sure whether he submitted. I got the draft, but okay.
So
But in any case, I personally, I don't think that, I mean, this DTMF, it's not 3DPP specific, so my intention has been, if no one else does it, to write a draft as soon as we are clear with this, that proposes the info package for DTMF. I mean, it's something.
And then we're done. And let's suppose that there is a package out there for the DTMF thing. We've got this info framework, and we've got a DTMF package. Exactly one usage of a framework. We went through a heck of a lot of effort to close a festering wound for one package. Where are the packages?
No, what I also said was that the OpenIPTV forum is doing a package which is not DTMF. I said that I don't have the detailed information on exactly what this package
does. It's time
does.
To bring that information to me.
Yeah, but so it's not a DTMF.
You may not have it right this second. The work probably, what I'm trying to figure out is how to take this thing through IETF evaluation and IESG evaluation. And I think that we're going to need to have a package in hand when this goes. You know, people should talk to me about that and challenge it. You know,
I'm
we
happy.
Think we can put up a bare framework, maybe we should do that, right? But I'm, you know, why are we spending all the time on this if we don't have customers for it?
People who intend to write a package or use this in any way, please, you know, drop an email to the list just explaining your intention so we can judge the level of interest in basically creating packages. Spencer.
Spencer Dawkins. And I just wanted to speak in favor of what Robert was saying. I think that it's been extremely helpful in media control for us to have packages that go along with the control framework that are being worked in parallel. So I think that would be extremely helpful for doing what Robert said.
Okay, thank you. Alan?
Alan Johnson. Since the original use case for info was SIPT, surely we should have a package for SIPT?
I mean, sure. I mean, someone can do that. I think we have discussed that on the list, and I think that that's not really going to help because the draft allows legacy usages, right? And SIPT is one of the legacy usages, so I doubt that people will. But, of course, no one prevents you from doing an info package for SIPT. I mean, it's not forbidden.
Eric, stop playing with the thing. And
I like playing with my thing. That's right. So, you know, it is, you know, reality check time. I mean, DTMF, you know, before I had a job, I volunteered to do it, but that is something that probably does need to be done. SIPT, I can't imagine any gateway manufacturer, you know, redoing their implementation to, you know, no matter how nice this framework is, to do that. But, you know, in a sense, somewhat lame, and I'll admit, lamely answering Robert's, you know, point. You know, we do know of a small handful of use cases. My concern is that, like, you know, we could have, instead of doing the info packages work, done the DTMF in SIP signaling mechanism and be done with it. And although we've been guilty in the IETF of trying to build generic building blocks, and we end up spending years talking about, well, it could do this, it could do that, it could do this. I think this is a case where it's pretty well, well constrained, and you know, we probably are doing a little bit more than we will find out that we need, but it's probably not that much more. And I think we're getting a lot of flexibility and potential capability for things that we're just not envisioning right now into the future.
Adam Roach, John got up here as the other author of the SIPT spec that defined this info usage and basically just said, LOL, I'm coming up here to more explicitly say, no. It makes as much sense to actually put a new info package together for SIPT as it would be to go back and put together an event package for PINT. It just, it's nonsensical. No.
Okay, we can move on. But anyway, if people intend to do something with event packages, define something new, a new usage, whatever, please report back to the list. As I said, we need to judge the level of interest and the level of usefulness of the framework we are developing. Do you have more slides?
No,
that's it.
That's it.
Okay. Thank you.